All right, so it's my honor, Dancing Crow, to introduce you. Dancing Crow, also known as Dr. Deborah Francis, is a elder naturopathic doctor. She's an herbalist. She's a homeopath. She's a mother and a grandmother and a lover of horses and of animals and of plants. And she doesn't call herself this, but I can definitely attest that she is an amazing medicine woman and a true elder. And I'm so deeply honored, and I know I speak for everybody on this call, to have this opportunity to listen to her wisdom. And I'm also honored, Dancing Crow, to call you a friend and a teacher. So thank you for being here and for taking the time to share with all of us. And with that, I turn it over to you. Oh, we can hear you.
Okay, good. That was a little scary. I'm going, oh no, how long before they find out they can't hear me?
We're with you.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about the title of the class is Crisis to Opportunity, COVID, Vaccines, Conspiracy Theories, and Polarization. So, so what I want to start with is a teaching that I'm going to keep going back to and back to and back to over and over again, because everything really can be taken back down to one wound, which is our wound of separation, and what Charles Eisenstein calls the myth of separation. But we're like in this time in which for centuries and generations, there's just been this movement towards more and more separation, separation from ourselves, separation from our souls, separation from our hearts, separation from each other, from the natural world. We could talk on and on and on about that for a really long time. But we're going to talk about it just in the context of the current crisis today. So if we go back to the medicine wheel, and the medicine wheel is a primary altar. It's the altar space upon which all other ceremonies are based. All of our ceremonies among the Lakota, as far as I know, all the indigenous people of Turtle Island and probably around the world, are based in the middle of the medicine wheel, which is the circle of life. And life is it's like making our altar life, because the medicine wheel is life. And it consists of the four directions: the west, north, east, south, above, Father Sky, below, Mother Earth, and then the Great Spirit infused through all. But the thing I'm going to bring up about that now is a great teaching about the medicine wheel, which is let me back up just a little bit, that in the modern culture, we're trained to think in terms of either or and right and wrong, and so automatically our thinking is very polarized. Even in school, like what's the right answer, what's the wrong answer, and there's usually just one answer, and it kind of trains us into thinking like, well, it's this way or that way, or it has to be this way, and you know, the Democrats are right and the Republicans are wrong, and oh, those damn liberals, they're all the problems. And you know what I'm saying? It's like everybody thinks everybody else is right or wrong. And one way of separation, of healing the thing of separation, is to move out of that. And if we look at the medicine wheel, if you're standing in the east, then you have one point of view looking at what's in the center. If you're standing in the west, you have a different point of view. And so you could have a war about that, because, you know, the east is looking at it from this angle, and the west is looking at it from that angle, and really they're just different angles. And so the more we can look at all the different points of view on the medicine wheel and stay open to everybody's point of view and not make people wrong, then the more we'll be able to get along and start to heal that myth of separation. And that includes even the things within ourselves. So I want to read something from a book called Seven Arrows. It was published in 1972. It's by a native elder named Haumea Storm. And this is what he says about this. If you and I were sitting in a circle of people on the prairie, and if I were then to place a painted drum or an eagle feather in the middle of this circle, each of us would perceive these objects differently. Our vision of them would vary according to our individual positions in the circle, each of which would be unique. There are levels upon levels of perceptions that we must consider when we try to understand our individual perceptions of things, or when we try to relate our own perceptions to those of our brothers and sisters. Every single one of our previous experiences in life affect in some way the mental perspective from which we see the world around us. So that's one of those simple teachings that has really deep, I go back to it over and over and over again, and it has really, moving into that paradigm and that way of thinking has really helped me so much. And even when, like, there's somebody opposing me or somebody wants to get into, you know, trigger me into an argument or something, or I find myself kind of being polarized, it really helps to kind of go, okay, my point of view is valid, but so is theirs, even if it seems totally opposite, even if I, you know, and then somehow if I can find a way to meet people halfway. So let me give you an example. In my 20s, I was very, very active in the environmental movement, particularly around nuclear power, and I was like the head of an initiative drive down here. I mean, I was really into it, and we got this bill canceled or passed or not something by one vote, and, you know, it was really like a big part of my life. And then later, when I was living further north, and I had my horses, I was riding with all kinds of people. Horses threw me together with all kinds of people that I wouldn't otherwise have hung out with. And I was one of my favorite people that I rode with worked in a nuclear plant. And so one night we were all out to dinner, and her and her husband and another friend, my friend Betty, and Betty was kind of like more like, you know, on the side of where I was, you know, she was more like anti-nuke and everything. We're all having dinner, and I said to them, tell me about working in a nuclear plant. Like, don't you worry about the dangers of the radiation? And, like, what, you know, I wanted to know what they were thinking. My friend Betty, she was just sparkling. She thought, oh, my God, I'm going to get into a big sparky argument, and she was waiting for sparks to fly and fire to fly and volcanoes and stuff, but that wasn't my intention. I had no intention. I just really, truly wanted to know their point of view. And I've learned so much being with people who are really different than me, who think really different from me, and not reacting, but just really curiously going, where are they coming from that they think so differently than I do? It's been huge for me. So that is, I just offer that teaching. There's, I want to quote another medicine person who was my teacher, my elder, Navajo medicine woman, Annie Kahn. I keep talking about her. And I'm going to quote her from a book called Medicine Women, Medicine Women, Curanderas, and Women Doctors, I think is the name of it. It was anyway, there's an interview that some women anthropologists did with Annie, and in the book she says, I reject nothing, or Annie Kahn rejects nothing. And she says, you are sick when you develop the habit of excluding. You are off balance, you are out of harmony. Everything that interferes with living makes illness. You are sick when you develop the habit of excluding. And we are totally in the habit of excluding. We're totally in the habit of excluding. And as a result, we get very polarized. We get really polarized. And it's so much more fun and so much more helpful to stay open to everybody's point of view. And the other thing that I found that is interesting is that this doesn't happen all the time, but I often find that when I'm willing to really listen with an open heart and true curiosity about where a person's coming from, not trying to make them right or wrong, not arguing with them, just really curious about where they're coming from, a lot of times they drop a lot of defensiveness and they soften, and then there's more opportunity for dialogue. And it doesn't mean I'm going to try and convince them. It just means that now we can start to dialogue and learn from each other. So we drop that idea of I'm going to try and make this person understand my point of view. I think vaccines are terrible. No, I think vaccines are necessary, you know, or whatever it is. Like, oh, my God, there should be no guns. Oh, my God, you know, we should have regulation. And, you know, oh, my God, you know, we should all be allowed total freedom. But, you know, we get so polarized because we don't listen. And if we could just forget about trying to convince anybody or argue anybody into anything and just keep our hearts open, it's huge. It's really, really huge. So, let's see, what else did I want to say about that? I'm looking at my notes here. I'm paying attention to my notes. So, so we want to be more inclusive instead of exclusive. And when I'm going around the medicine wheel, like within my own mind, for example, if I'm approaching a healing situation or I'm doing a shamanic journey for healing or there's something up in my own life or, you know, I'm looking at all these different points of view that come up in a conversation or whatever, the place that I'm going to go to, the point of view that I'm going to choose to work with is going to be the point of view that takes me to the greatest healing, that seems to bring the greatest amount of healing, the greatest amount of congruency, the greatest amount of relationship and connectedness. And that point of view might change from moment to moment. So I'm not going to say, ah, this is the right point of view. I'm going to say, oh, this is the point of view I want to take in this moment. This is what works in this moment. And maybe 5 minutes from now, I'm going to take the opposite point of view or a different point of view on the medicine wheel. So it also gets us out of this idea of what's true, what's true. It's all true. It's all true. And it's just a question of which truth is true now, which truth is serving me now. Because, you know, when you think about it, this universe is infinite. It's created by an infinite being. And although there is much finiteness in our lives and in on the life on the earth, the creator is infinite. And so the perspectives about what is are infinite. Like whatever perspective we have, whatever point of view we have, is just one small point of view in the whole circle of life. So if we say, like a lot of people feel like we create our own reality. And people can get quite dogmatic about that. Like, that's what's true, and I wrote the whole map, and all that sort of thing, you know. And it's a great point of view, and it has merit. And if it didn't have merit, there wouldn't be so many people that ascribe to it and really stick to it. But I've seen situations where that point of view is really damaging, actually. And I knew a woman some years ago who had a really heinous, terrible childhood. She ran away when she was in her adolescence, and then she ended up working with somebody who was teaching you create your own reality, and it was hugely, hugely empowering to her. And so she found her power, and it was really good, and she began to, you know, take her own power and create and know that she could, you know, create and take the reins in her own life. And then a time came when some of that stuff started to come bubbling back up and needing to be healed, and she couldn't control her life anymore, and she couldn't, you know, life, sometimes you can take the reins and control it, sometimes you can't. And so she couldn't do that anymore, and a lot of feelings were coming up, probably some old stuff to be healed, and she ended up really feeling bad about herself because she felt like she was creating it all, and therefore if she was miserable and she was depressed, then it was because she was creating it. So in that situation, that was not serving her at all. So you can see how in one moment that something can be very of great service, and in another moment it can be a detriment, and you want to take the opposite, which is, you know, perhaps that, you know, we're in a bigger picture here, and now something's up to flow with, and it's not about can you create. It's more about can you open your heart to this, can you move with this, can you be in this process and follow Ariadne's thread, as it were, the thread of Grandmother Spider as she weaves the web. Can you follow that thread to the healing? And just and let the process be the healing. Let the process be the thing. So one of the things, like I think about, is this question: to wear a mask or not to wear a mask. That is the question, because you know I'm not in town really, and so I'm way up in the mountains. But I keep hearing about people like getting really angry at each other because like somebody's wearing a mask and somebody's not wearing a mask, and the person not wearing a mask is making fun of the person wearing a mask, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, do we really need to be at war with these things, you know? So the other thing we want to bring in is like metaquiasin. So it's like, I may think it's foolish to wear a mask, but somebody else feels vulnerable, and we don't really know what's going on with this COVID thing. And so if it's going to make other people feel comfortable to wear a mask, is it such a big deal if I wear a mask? It's going to make people uncomfortable if I don't. It's going to make them comfortable if I do. Is it such a big sacrifice to wear a mask? So so there is that, you know. And then, but the other thing is to look at the points of view of both people. So the person who wants everybody out in public wearing a mask, their concerns are valid, right? We can see about the validity of their concerns. They have concerns about getting sick. They have concerns about this disease spreading. Those are very valid concerns. At the same time, the person who does not want to wear a mask and is objecting, what is that person's point of view? Where are they coming from? And what is the? And we might say that if we sat and talked with them, we might find out that they have valid concerns about other things. You know, concerns of about the government taking over and the government like telling us what to do and we shouldn't be sequestering as much and letting the government tell us what to do. And so all of that has perspective, you know, and sometimes we tend to think, oh my God, these people are like conspiracy theories, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I remember in the 70s thinking that I heard like, you know, all these hippie friends of mine talking about, oh, this guy Monsanto who's going to take over the world food population. And I thought, oh my God, what a bunch of conspiracy nonsense, you know? So I'll tell you, that's made me pretty humble because now it turns out it's not a guy named Monsanto, it's a corporation. And sure enough, you know, we've got all this GMO and, you know, concern about take over the world population and all, or the world food, I'm sorry, not the world population, but the world food and having control in that way. And so, you know, I've learned to listen to everybody's point of view. Like, wow, why is this happening? Why do all these people have all this concern? There's a lot of people worried about conspiracy. So I'm taking a look at that point of view. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. And then, but I'm going to open to it, and then I'm going to open to the opposite, and I'm going to keep all those points of view open. And it's not, and so oftentimes it's a process. It's not like I'm going to get the answer by staying open, like, oh, there's no conspiracy, there is, or there, you know, it's more like I have to stay open to all points of view. And then what I do with those points of view is it helps me to be open to people more, to really listen and not invalidate people. We're very also in the habit of invalidating ourselves and each other. And that's very damaging and very sad that we do that because we close off one another, and it's another way in which we cause separation. So one thing I do with all of that, and this goes back to the first thing I talked about that first time, is how can I bring beauty to that? How can I bring, if there really is, if I'm looking at this point of view that there really are these globalists and, you know, and really they, you know, they are going to take over the world through our technology and those kinds of fears, if I'm going to stay open to that, what can I do with that and so I don't go into terror and all of that? I'm not really buying into it. I'm just staying open. Like, well, it's possible. It's possible. So what can I do with that? And that's when I go to ceremony and to dreaming. And I look at, like, what's underneath that? If indeed there is a conspiracy thing going on, if indeed that dominator archetype has gotten to that degree, or somebody wants to take over the world to that degree, or a group of people do, or whatever, you know, how can I heal that? And oftentimes when I journey into that, I find that underneath that is there's fear and concern, and, like, why would anybody want to do that? And what is it that needs to be healed under that? So then I'll pray and just ask for healing for that. And so whatever it is, not so much the thing itself, but praying and sending, you know, you could just chant Om to whatever it is that's underneath that that would cause anyone to want to be able to, you know, to take over, to do GMO and take over the world food population or you know, control people or whatever it is, you know, or spew out chemicals or whatever it is, like, there's a wound there that people feel like they can't get enough control and enough power over. There's a wound there. And so then we can begin to work with that. But if we decide it's not true or we run from it because we're scared and we don't know what to do, it's like we're no longer open and we're starting to close down and we create more of the separation wound. And, yeah. So is that helpful? Any questions? Is that, Lauren? Do you have anything you
want to
add or say, or is that pretty clear?
Yeah, that was super duper clear. I think one thing I'll add is kind of like going back to earlier when you were talking, but I remember I learned this just about, I guess, bringing it back to like a relating with people, kind of way, and how do I not go into a polarized mindset, and how do I myself not become fundamentalist in my own views, even though I think they're very great. Thank you very much. But as I remember in doula training, so in training to be a birth doula, there was a teaching that came that was essentially this. The teaching is that, you know, every woman has a long list of very good reasons as to why they're wanting to have the kind of birth that they're going to have. So if a woman wants to give birth in a hospital, she has very good reasons why. If a woman wants to give birth at home, there's very good reasons why. If a woman wants to have an epidural, if a woman wants to have a C-section, like whatever it is that this woman is wanting, there's a long list of reasons why that come from her life experience that I, as somebody who will be of service to her, will not understand, do not understand, and could not understand. And so I need to check my fundamentalism at the door, which in my fundamentalism might be like, oh, every woman should give birth at home and have this beautiful goddess experience. It's like, well, you know, no. So anyway, that was really helpful for me both as a doula as well as just as a human being in life to kind of remember that mantra that everybody has a very good, very good list of reasons for being the way they are. And I think about that too with like addictions and even like neuroses and stuff. It's like, well, you know, there's a wound under there, like you were saying, Dancing Crow. And maybe this, you know, talking about addiction, like maybe this addiction is literally the lifeline. And so that's a pretty very good reason. And also like knowing that I don't understand, but I can have compassion. So yeah, I feel like that teaching helps me in just like in having compassion for people, individual people, but also even, yeah, groups of people too. It's like, huh. Yeah.
Thank you. Those are really good examples. Yeah.
We do have a couple. Go ahead.
Let me make a comment and then we'll take the question. I think going back to what you were saying too, is it brings us into more humility and gets us out of our ego. Like, and again, not to invalidate our own perspective, but it just, like, when you start listening to people, you really, and opening in that way, you just realize what a speck you are in the universe, you know. And we're all beautiful, and every one of us has purpose, and we're all really important, but we're all just one little part of it. And, yeah, it brings a lot of humility, and it opens our hearts, you know. I just, a lot of those are some of the best conversations I've ever had with people who come from a completely different place than me, and then our hearts really meet. And I'm so grateful for those things. Okay, go ahead. What's the question?
Okay, so this is a question from someone on email. How would you respond to someone who is adamantly pushing their polarized worldview?
Yeah. Boy, God, that really annoys me. So, and I have to listen to my own anger and, you know, an irritation with it. And it's a dance, you know. It's a dance. And so to say how I would respond every single time is, because I'm also going to be listening to my own feelings and the nature of the push and why they're pushing. So the first thing I'm going to do is listening to what's going on and why are they pushing. Now, sometimes people are pushing so hard that you have to push back or you have to pull back. It's not safe. And so sometimes it just depends on what's going on energetically. So there are times when I might just put up a boundary, or there may be times when I open and I listen and I'm like, why, wow. And this is the best possible scenario, is that I can open up and I can listen and I can say, whoa, you know, they're really, really quite adamant about this, you know, like really, they really, really want me to go along with them and what, you know, and just stay and just listen to what it is underneath that's driving them that need me to come around to their point of view so much. You know, what is that pain under there? Yeah. So the person who asked that, can we unmute that one person?
No. Okay. I know. That's the thing about, huh?
Can we unmute everybody and then have everyone mute themselves so that we can unmute the person who asked the question and we can have a dialogue?
It's set up so
definitely.
Unmute themselves, Lauren.
Okay. What is the command to do that? Or they can just do it on their phone.
They can just do it on their phone.
Okay, Ashley, if you would, Ashley, if you would unmute yourself.
Okay,
Dancing Crow would love to.
I just unmuted Ashley H.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so does that answer your question? Tell me more.
Yes, it's really helpful. I just am finding that I have colleagues that I really love that are not being flexible in the viewpoints that they're witnessing, and it's straining relationships, not just with strangers, but actually with my close friends, and I get to a point where they are no longer listening, and it's very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't speak to those, you know, every situation. You can hear, it's not, like, even this idea of staying open isn't always what you do. Sometimes you realize, whoa, this is too much negative energy coming at me, and I have to close down. So there's even on the medicine wheel, there's a time to close down. But I often find if I just listen with compassion to why they're so inflexible and what's going on there, that oftentimes that can be helpful. You know, in the situation, especially when it's a friend, you know, or, you know, even being able to, I don't know if this is possible, but sometimes you can even say, I feel like our friendship is stressed by this polarization, and I wonder if we can heal this together. Like, I don't want to change your mind, but I wonder if we can somehow come to a middle ground together where our hearts, where we can agree to disagree and our hearts can stay open. Does that help, Ashley?
Yes, that's really helpful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's a really good question. There, you know, I mean, I'm sort of putting out a paradigm here, but what's important is that we keep our hearts open, and it's that's bigger than you think. You know, I can remember when I first sat with the herb hawthorn, which is one of my prime herbs. I just I couldn't live without that herb, and that plant really helps to keep our hearts open. But also, the plant has thorns. It's in the rose family, and she's really good for the heart, and she helps keep our heart energetically open, but also protected. So I fell in love with that plant, and I would carry it around and munch on it and take the tincture, and I sat with it and spent all kinds of time with that grandmother, really getting to know her medicine. And she helped me to notice when I was closing my heart down, and she taught me how to keep my heart open but protected. And I was shocked as I worked with her how often I close my heart down for the slightest thing. So, you know, that's a practice right there. And you could get that herb. Hawthorn is very common. For those of you that don't know herbs, it's really common on the shelf. You just get a tincture and take a few drops and sit with it and ask that grandmother, because the plants are living beings. And this is a very wise grandmother. She's really easy to communicate with. She's very generous and very eager to help us open our hearts and yet stay protected. And she, to sit with her and how, and then just pay attention, notice your heart, notice whoa, how you close down from the slightest thing, and then not to force yourself open, but say, whoa, why am I closing down there, and how can I protect and stay open without closing down? And it's an ongoing practice. You know, I got pretty good at it, and then you relapse because, the world is what it is, and you go, oh, I'm closing down again. I don't want to be closed down. And so, it's an ongoing process, and the hawthorn is great to help us with that. And I think it's an ongoing process in these times, just because we tend to be so, without meaning to, we're often hurtful and invalidating and kind of hurtful to one another without even meaning to. And it can just be oh, that's nonsense. And the person doesn't mean to invalidate or hurt us when they say, oh, that's nonsense. But that could be just huge for us, because whatever it is we're talking about isn't nonsense at all to us. So, Okay, what's the other question?
Okay, the next question is from Jesse. The question is, how about social engagement? What would have happened if all people had been open to Hitler or to Mussolini?
Oh, yeah, that's a really, really good question. So that's where you take the medicine wheel and you balance openness with not being open. Or you talk about, you stay open to somebody, but if they're really coming after you with a carving knife, you don't, or they're coming after you with a gun or something, you don't say, oh, why are they doing this? What are they feeling? No, you know, it's like, no, and then you go to the part of the medicine wheel where you run or you block or you attack back or you do what you have to do. But the ultimate place that we want to be in is this place of like, so when I look at Hitler, and actually the work of Alice Miller, let me tell you about Alice Miller. It was I don't know if she's still around or not, but she lived through World War II, and I think she was in Austria. She's a Jungian analyst, and she was, you know, after the horrors of World War II and everything that happened with Hitler and Mussolini and all of that, she hated Hitler. She hated him. And she thought, oh, I can't do this. You know, I can't live in this hate. And so in order to heal herself, really, she began researching him. And she found out that he had this terrible childhood. And she really spearheaded the work in which we've discovered that a lot of these people, like Mussolini and Hitler and these people that really want to take over the world, often are very, very wounded. And in Hitler's case, he really had some pretty heinous things going on. And for those of you who know homeopathy, he's probably a stramonium, which is to say that he had night terrors. Even as an adult, he had terrible night terrors, and he dealt with really what in shamanic worlds we would call demons, were just inner demons, and he projected that out onto the Jewish people so that he could fight it out in the outer. So when you know that kind of psychological thing, you go, oh my God, you know? And when I look at staying open, it's not like I want to stay open to that man or let him into my heart, because that doesn't feel safe to me, but I can look at that archetype. I can really, because he's not the only one, you know? And in fact, if he was the only one, he would never have come to power. Like, what about all those other people that worked under him? What was wrong with them? How could they do that? You know, it sickens your stomach, you know? But the way to stay open to it then is to look at that pattern in humanity. What feeds that pattern, and how can that be, and how can we bring healing to that? And that's how shamans look at things. Like, what is the underlying pattern, you know, and what is, sometimes it's past lives, or sometimes it's a bigger archetypal pattern. Oftentimes we're looking at big patterns in humanity. And that's a big pattern in humanity. It's like projecting our demons out. And people do that all the time on the microcosmic way, in a microcosmic way, in which, and that's why it's so important not to throw negative feelings at people. Because sometimes what we're feeling or thinking about someone is totally a projection. And so also recognizing the ways in which we do that, and certainly not in the way that he did to that extreme, but in what way do I project, you know, something that I'm not owning in myself onto other people, and then I'm putting them down. So in that way, we're healing that separation also, like, oh, in that way then, we can have more compassion for him because we realize he is in an extreme case, in an extreme way, caught in a pattern of projection and fear and this need to beat down the demons that really he needs to, somehow have dealt with either shamanically, spiritually, or counseling, or, you know, whatever would have been the thing, or and a good dose of homeopathic stramonium, or, yeah. So does that help?
Yeah, that definitely helps me. Jesse, if you want to unmute yourself and respond, feel free. We can't see your name, so we can't unmute you.
Are you there?
Doesn't look like it.
Oh, too bad.
I'm sure they're there, but not unmuting.
Okay. Because it's nice to be able to dialogue. And,
yeah.
Yeah. But that's a really, really good example because, I often think about that now. Like when I thought about, you know, the Boston bombers, those two young men that just set off that bomb. Those, you know, so many people are still living with that, you know, with the injuries and it's horrible. And then I thought, oh my gosh, you know the amount of negativity that's coming at those two young men right now, all this hate and negativity. And so I very deliberately, you know, prayed for them and what's underneath them and all these other young men that are acting so violently, all this senseless violence, and just praying. And it could be just something like, whatever it is that drives this, I send Om to it and I ask that these two young men and all young men like them, all people like them, be healed. Because if we just go on hating, we're never gonna heal anything, because it's a problem in humanity. You know, the thing about Hitler was he just came to a lot of power, and so he was able to do a lot of damage. And it's really, you know, it's horrible, and there's no denying that. But and it's also, when I talk about healing the enemy, the so-called enemy or the oppressor, if you will, because we're talking about really the oppressor, victim-oppressor archetype, and when I talk about healing them, I'm not talking about enabling them or excusing them at all. We have to take responsibility for what we do, whether it's conscious or unconscious or it comes from our wounds or whatever it comes. Coming from our wound is not an excuse to hurt someone else. So I'm not in any way excusing them or excusing their behavior. But I remember Rosenberg, what is his first name? Marshall Rosenberg, who talks about nonviolent communication, who coined the term nonviolent communication and brought together a whole system for teaching nonviolent communication. He talked about being in a hospital, in a military hospital, with a young man who had just come back from war, and they all, you know, they were missing limbs, terrible injuries, and they were all laughing and joking and about their injuries, and he was talking to them, and, you know, they were trying to make light of it, and just, you know, and then he said, what about the young men that you hurt? And they all got quiet. Like carrying the pain of having hurt somebody else in the war was bigger than their own wounds. It was like a bigger wound in a certain way. So what happens, the other thing to know about people who are oppressors, either in the microcosm or in that really big way, is that they get caught in something that's bigger than them. Hitler certainly did. And they basically, whenever we attack somebody else or put down somebody else, we're basically injuring a part of our own souls. And I see that over and over again. I'm working with somebody right now who that's really, really up, where, you know, where when we attack, like, so he attacks the Jews, but it's like also a part of his own soul that he's projecting out, he's attacking. And so they're hurting themselves, and we're not separate. And so it's a terrible, terrible, terrible wound to the soul to inflict that kind of damage on another person. Again, I'm not feeling sorry for them, and I'm not excusing them, but I am recognizing, like, oh, my God, can you imagine being in that place, being that person who gets to that place where they're capable of inflicting that kind of damage? It's really, I mean, it turns my stomach, and it also, like, oh, it gives me a sense of horror. I can't even imagine being in that kind of a place. So those are the different perspectives that we can take because that help us not to quite separate out. We have to separate out enough to protect ourselves, obviously, but we don't. We're not making it like either or, good guy, bad guy. We're more looking at the archetypes in humanity because, you know, if it's not Hitler, it's somebody else. You know, and we see that in the microcosm. You know, where people need to bully one another or put one another down, or even in a little conversation, like somebody has to one up the other person and put them down or something, is the microcosmic expression of that same thing, and that needs to be healed in humanity. We need to be able to heal that. So we have to work with that in the microcosmic way as well. Does that help?
I think so, yeah.
Any other questions?
There's one other from that same person, Jesse. And that is, how do you recommend letting go of old emotional hang-ups?
I guess I don't worry about letting go of them. I go into them and I embrace them and I ask how they're serving me and why are they still there. So we're always trying to get over something, and then we're like rejecting parts of ourselves. So I don't know what hang up you're talking about, Jesse, but I bring it into my heart. Like whatever that hang up is, I bring it into my heart, I converse with it, I bring compassion to it. And as I do that, it will reveal its purpose to me. how are you there to serve me? It may take repeated sessions. You may have to do it with a friend or with a counselor, but I basically go into it instead of try and get rid of it. I don't necessarily psychoanalyze it. I bring it into my heart and just dialogue with it. And it you wouldn't have that hang up if there wasn't a reason. So I process through it by embracing it. Does that help? Can Jesse unmute?
Jesse, if you can you unmute?
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
There's no other questions that have come through.
Okay. I'm going to move on to the next thing. I'm actually not doing so much journeying tonight. I'm really going to do more lecturing and running at the mouth because there's just a lot that's kind of come up, and I hope this is all helpful for people. So the other thing that's really come up that's along this kind of a place and why it's important not to send negativity to people or be thinking negative things about people is that our thoughts have amazing power. Our thoughts and our feelings have amazing power. And we often don't know how much power that they have. And Lauren, you were just telling me the other day that Carl Jung said that his spirit guide once came to him and said, you really underestimate the power of your thoughts. You think that they're just kind of, that they don't have any form. But they're, but just because that they don't have any form doesn't mean they don't have power. They're just as real as a car or a tree or any other physical object. And I was listening to Cassandra Ingerman talk again, and she was also talking about the same thing, that negative thoughts can be like darts coming at people. And people who are more sensitive or more vulnerable, have just been through a grief or are having a harder time in life or maybe ill or, you know, their shields are down a bit. Nobody's shields are up all the time. I don't care who you are. Your shields kind of get battered through life, your boundaries or whatever you want to call that. And so those kind of people are going to be much more susceptible. You know, if you're feeling a little down anyway, you've had kind of a down day and you've just kind of been dealing with a lot of criticism at work or something, and then, you at the grocery store and somebody's just a little critical or something, it just can, like, be a dart coming in. So, and those things can really throw people off, can throw our moods off. It's we don't really realize how often our thoughts and feelings are, how damaging they can be. And I've seen people become physically sick from somebody's negativity being thrown at them. And I've seen that quite frequently. So the first thing is to realize that and really know that. And the second thing is to become conscious and pay attention to our thoughts and feelings. And oftentimes in this culture, this goes back to this exclusionary thing. It's like, I'm either a good person or a bad person, and bad people hate, and I don't hate because I'm a good person, and bad people, are resentful, but I'm a good person, and I don't ever feel resentful. No, it's not like that. We're all over the place. You know, anybody can be pushed to feeling anything. And so what we want to do is keep our hearts open to all of it. Like, whoa, there's resentment. I wonder what's going on there. Bring it into our hearts. Bring it into our hearts. And then if we're feeling, and sometimes we're more conscious of it, like, oh, my God, I just hate that person. And it could even be somebody, you know, like some politician or something. I remember a patient of mine came into the office. She's a very politically active person when George W. Bush was in office. And she came in one day, and she was just exasperated. She said, I hate him. I said, well, you know, that isn't really doing any good. I said, because he feeds on hate, and he knows what to do with hate. So let's try something different. But and so we want to turn that around. We don't want to keep, because all we do is feed negativity when we do that, as well as, you know, possibly really damaging people. And people who work shamanically, we see that all the time, right, Lauren?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We see that all the time where we're sometimes it'll even be like a dart that you'll pull out of people that is just coming from somebody else's negativity, somebody's jealousy. And a lot of times we really feel justified in what we feel and kind of, feeling negative about somebody or even attacking them in our own minds or something. But it's really important that we not do that, that we turn those darts around and take responsibility for them and not send negativity. Now, it's important to feel those feelings. So it's really, One of the things we do that I used to do a lot is I remember when I was going through a process and a lot of anger came up at a certain person, and I just put it all into the earth. You know, I just put it. But I said to Creator, I don't really want to create bad karma. I don't want this to go to them. I just want to get it out of my system. So you express it, and I just put it into the earth like a cauldron and ask it to be composted. So we can do that. And then the other thing we can do is just sit with the feeling and get beneath it and ask what the healing is, how that feeling can take us to healing, just like Alice Miller did in exploring her hatred of Hitler and realizing that she just needed to really heal that to move out of that. Anything you'd add to that, Lauren?
I would say, so the, like, there's the Buddhist teaching of, like, seeds of compassion, and I would, something, a prayer that I walk with is that, you know, nothing that I, no word I speak or thought I think adds any, plants any new seeds of blame or seeds of hate or seeds of anger, and instead that it can be seeds of compassion. So that's a mantra that I work with. I would also greet Dancing Crow, just what you said about the helpfulness of creating, of emoting within a container. So just like setting the intention that I'm just going to go into this emotion, I'm just going to let it flow and let it fly, and, and then give it to the earth or give it to a spirit guide or whatever support there is that I feel called to connect to. Another trick or act that I've done is if I'm feeling like I'm going into those thoughts of negativity towards another person or group of people, I'll shift it and like shift the image in my mind, and instead maybe I'll send them flowers, or I'll ask a spirit guide to send them flowers or something else that's beautiful. And then that same spirit guide can also set a boundary so that my thought, you know, any thought that wasn't in beauty can go up to the sky or down to the earth, and instead it's only flowers that get put out there.
That's a great idea. Yeah, that's a great idea. To send like a positive image, because a lot of times you feel like you want to send something. You know, if the emotion's really, if the hurt is really great from that person, or your emotion is really great, it's hard not to send. So you send something good, something like flowers. Yeah. How can that hurt? Yeah,
and I would also say, especially if I'm, like, super hot on something, like, if it's really up for me or really alive and, like, I'm clearly very angry or very in process around something, and there is, you know, quote, negativity coming out of me or off me, I'll definitely be connected to a spirit guide or some, you know, higher divine consciousness that can kind of serve as the intermediary. Like, there's times when it's not safe for me to, you know, send compassion to this person or that group of people. And instead, I just need a little more protection and a little more shielding. And so, you know, I'll be sure to be connected to some help to kind of shield that and also help me with it and keep that boundary up.
Yeah. Thank you. And a lot of times when we can't send compassion, we can like put our warrior shields up to protect ourselves and ask the spirit guide to protect us. And then later we can, you know, oftentimes what I go into is then as I'm able to step back, I'll feel a sense of horror at that whatever that person is doing, which is kind of akin to compassion, but it's not safe in that moment to feel compassion. I think a lot of it, too, is intention. Like it's like what Lauren was saying about she has that prayer, that Buddhist prayer, that intention, always like surrendering your intention and asking, because we can't do this by ourselves. It's too much. And you can't be totally conscious every single moment because, you know, you're busy trying to figure out what groceries you're buying or, you know, what you're making for dinner or, like, some chemistry assignment or whatever it is, you know. You can't constantly be focused on what we're thinking, saying, feeling, and doing. And so asking, you know, doing it through prayer and intention, like, don't please come through and take charge, you know. Ask the Great Spirit to take charge, surrender. Help me to really, you know, not use my power of thought or feeling or anything I do or say in any kind of negative or hurtful way, and really reiterating that. I think I also want to say, too, when we talk about discharging emotions, I never think of it in terms of getting rid of them. I only think of it in terms of expressing them. So I'm expressing them into the earth where they can be used as compost, but I'm always listening and I'm always paying attention. I'm never trying to get rid of them or reject them. And again, I want to keep them into my heart. It's more like I just need to express them somewhere and Mother Earth can take it. You know, she can dialogue with us and she can take that, but we're never trying to get rid of them. People are always trying to get rid of these parts of themselves, you know, get rid of their anger or their resentment or whatever it is. And it'll just come back again. It doesn't work, is what's been my experience. And oftentimes, if it does work, it just kind of leaves us as an empty shell. And it's part of our humanity. It has to be integrated in a good way. And a lot of these things, you know, are not meant for, you know, for us to do alone either. You know, we might want to process with a friend or a counselor again. But it's different. It's more inclusive and not so exclusionary. I'm going to take a look at my notes. Any other questions?
None that have come through. Nope.
Okay. Oh, you know, this has been a really great thing for me, a guideline for me, which is I would never wish for my adversary what I would not wish for myself. I would never do to my adversary what I would not do to myself. So if I were in that same situation, if I, for example, were being the oppressive person, that I was hurtful or dominating or whatever, being a bully or whatever, then I would want to do to myself whatever I would do to my adversary. So one of the things I've done sometimes is just really, you know, if my fire is up and I'm really, really angry, I'll just pick up my spiritual sword and just go after them with light. And surround them in divine light and turn them over to divine and just ask that all negativity that is hurtful to other beings, themselves and other beings, just be lifted from them, and I'll go after and, like, that's what I'll do with my anger. And when I've done that to, sometimes I actually ask people to do that to me in order to get negativity that's projected at me out of me. And sometimes I've done that to people and I've found out in my inner vision that actually what I was seeing on them was a projection from somebody else. And so it's like and most of the time I recommend like radiating and not like aggressively sending, but sometimes if it's really, sometimes that's what's appropriate, is just to really go after somebody with light because it's just intolerable and that the fire is up and you have to work with that. And that's something that you work with your guides. I always ask that everything I think, say, feel, and do go through a shield of divine will. And I remember when I first was being initiated and I could feel that a lot of spiritual power was coming to me, I said to Spirit, look, you know, I'm not too impressed with what humans do with power down here, so I'm only accepting this gift on this condition, that you protect me from ever abusing my power. And I reinforced that prayer and that intention all the time. But even aside from shamanic power, it's like all of us have those feelings and, you know, negative feelings and this and that, you know, so-called negative feelings that we are hurting each other with all the time, and we have to be really careful about that. So surrendering to Creator continually and asking for that guidance and asking for Spirit to help to tone us and teach us is very, very powerful. Okay, I wanted to talk a little bit about, I wanted to talk about the Earth. Because I realized the other day, it's not like a new realization, but I sort of like, aha, oh, really kind of realized it in a deeper way, that we're all seeing the mother as sick. We're all seeing the mother as the earth as toxic. And it's not that that isn't true. This is also another kind of perception thing. It's that perception definitely has validity. There's no doubt about it. And it's really important that we have that perception and that we continue to share that perception, because we really need to stop doing what we're doing. We can't keep on polluting, which comes from, again, from our seeing the earth as an object or seeing water as an object that we can just use instead of seeing water and earth as living beings. So, but I suddenly was just walking, and I was connecting with the earth, and I was out among the trees, and it just rained. It was so fresh and beautiful outside, and I was just thinking about my own body and the earth, and I thought, well, you know, oh my gosh, you know, gradually, as I've watched people get sicker in the last 20 years, and the world get more toxic, and all of that sort of thing, it's like, it sort of eroded my unconscious in a certain way, and it's not that it isn't true, but I realized, like, I have to shift my vision, because the other thing that's true is the grandmother, the Mother Earth, she's, like, way, way powerful. She's way, and she's basically very, very healthy, and she's basically going to be able to throw this off, and that's already true. So I can bring in that parallel reality. So acknowledging that, yes, we are spewing too many toxins, yes, we're out of balance with the Earth, but one of the gifts of the COVID virus is that places have shut down and the air clears. Like she's healing herself like really quickly and renewing really quickly. So we have to acknowledge what is and then bring healing to it as well. Bring in the other perceptions on the medicine wheel. So if I go on going, oh my gosh, things are getting more and more toxic and da 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 da, then I start to get depressed. I don't know about the rest of you, but we get into that helpless despair cycle. But if I can go, wait a minute, that's just a perception. That's one perception on the medicine wheel. And just because it's manifesting doesn't mean it's what's true. So I'm going to say, yes, this is manifesting, and now I'm going to dream that that's healing. And that's really important. And I'll give you some examples of, I was at a sweat lodge many years ago in Castle Rock, with a man who had stayed with Sandra Ingerman, and he said that there was a river, he told me about a river that was polluted, and the city was going to, I don't know where it was or whatever, but many years ago that he told me this story, but he said there was the water was very polluted and the city was going to do some cleansing, you know, whatever they do to try and, you know, cleanse the river, and but, you know, it wasn't going to happen right away because they had to get the funding and the bureaucracy and all that, and so this group working with Sandra, they all got a vial of the water, and every day at a certain time, they would meditate on that water and just visualize that water as clear, crystal, beautiful, clean, healthy water. And they did that, and when they retested the water, the water had been cleansed just with their intention. So never underestimate also the power of the beauty of our thoughts. Our thoughts and our feelings, especially when we combine the power of our thought and intention with the emotion of our heart, it's huge. It's a marriage of Father Sky and Mother Earth, and that's when life comes into being, is when we take Father Sky and Mother Earth and blend them together, bring them together, then life is born on this planet. So the same thing when we take our heads and our hearts and we marry them, then great power comes when we're doing that. So I often recommend that people do water ceremonies in just that way, just taking a glass of water or, you know, taking a water from a river or just sitting by a river. There's a lake that I was sitting at for a while last year that was a dammed up lake. And by the end of the year, after they've been irrigating it, it's getting really slimy. And, you know, and I just sat by the river or sat by that lake and I did ceremony with that lake, seeing it as real healing and seeing it as healed and apologizing for the people not asking before they dammed up. You know, the lakes might be fine. The rivers might be fine being dammed up, or they might not. The trouble is we never ask, we just do. So I apologized and I did that ceremony. But I often do ceremonies where we'll sit by a river, or every time I take a shower or I take a bath, I thank the water and I see the water is crystal clear, shimmering, clean. And the same thing, and then the water in people who our lymph systems and the water in our blood and the water in the lymph and the blood of all the plants and all the animals, of all creation, just seeing, giving thanks. We say, Mani, Michoni, Waste, the water is life, and life is good. So giving thanks to the water. But really seeing it as clear and crystal and coming back in that way. Crystal clean. And really coming back in that way. Our dreaming of it really helps, because if we keep seeing the earth as toxic, it's like we're adding more toxins. And again, we recognize what is, and we say, but what's really true, this is what's manifesting, but what's really true is the earth is vibrant and alive and healthy and beautiful. Okay. I want to tell a story. And this is a little story that happened in my life. And it's a little example of how life works sometimes. Because, and I don't know what this has to do with anything, but I have it in my notes. And let's see if I can figure out how it was relating to me. Oh, this is a situation in which, you know, things don't often, the universe doesn't often operate, like, it doesn't operate linearly, that's for sure. It doesn't operate in the nice, straight, clean line, and a lot of times we're like, you know, oh my God, what's this COVID virus, and all of, you know, what is this epidemic happening, and what, you know, all these terrible things happening, the economy falling apart, and all that sort of thing, And all of that is inevitable. COVID, that was one thing I wanted to say about COVID, is that bacteria and viruses, when they're pathogenic, they're manifesting negative thought forms. Toxins, the same way, are the result, the toxins we're spewing are the result of negative thought forms. So we have to go back to praying for the underlying negativity in humanity that allows us to continue to pollute. And to continue to consume more that we need, and continue to be in scarcity, to move underneath that. And even if you don't know what it is, just to send your prayer, to send Om into what's underneath it. I keep saying that, but it's really, really important. So this is just a simple little story about the way the world works. But I like many people, I'm often like fuming at the Great Spirit for like why there's all this suffering down here. And I'll tell you a couple stories, actually. Some people have heard this story. But one day, a few years ago, I was really going through hell. I mean, it was really bad. And I was, like, praying and doing my ceremonies, doing all these wise things, you know. And one day I just got mad, you know. And I just started yelling at the Great Spirit. And I didn't care if it was wise or it wasn't. I go, I can't believe you let all this suffering happen down here. I wasn't only just mad for myself. I was mad for everybody, you know. Like, I can't believe what you let it go. You're supposed to be this compassionate, loving God. And I was going on and on and on. And just in a regular, and I knew it was foolish, and I didn't really care. You know, I was just expressing, right? So, and then I finished by saying, you know, you ought to get down here and get in people's shoes sometimes. You know, and I knew it was stupid, and I didn't care, like I said. So anyway, a week later, my grandson was probably about 7 or 8 at the time, came to visit. We were out at the lake, and my shoes were sitting over on the beach, you know, drying in the sun, my little swimming shoes. And we were hanging out, you know, chatting, and suddenly he sits up straight, and he goes, Unchi, Unchi, look. Look at your shoes. Do you see that? The Great Spirit is in your shoes. Do you see that? Do you see that? So there's much that we don't know that's going on, you know, and we have to surrender to a wiser power. And this next little story was a great little incident for me. There was a woman across the street. This is when I had my place with my horses and so forth. And there was some young people that lived across the street, and you could tell they were had kind of had a rough life. They were probably 19, 20, something like that. And you could tell, just meeting them, you know, you could tell they were that they hadn't come from places of a lot of love and nourishment. They'd probably come from abusive homes. And they had this dog, and the dog had all these puppies. And they were right on a highway, and the puppies would run out of the highway, and I would just cringe, and I would pray, and I would just, you know, oh, you know. And one day I was out in my yard, hanging out with the horses, and I suddenly heard a car's brakes shriek, you know, the brakes shriek, and this yelp from a puppy, and I was like, oh, God. And I immediately prayed, and I said, Great Spirit, why do you let these things happen? Why do you let these things happen? And then I went into the house, so I was really exasperated with the Great Spirit. And so I went into the house, and I got some high-potency arnica, and I headed way down the driveway, out to the highway, and the young woman was there, and she was, like, really scared to pick up the pup, and the pup was, like, you know, and, you know, it was, like, what you'd expect, and I talked to her, and then this neighbor came by, and this neighbor was, you know, a dominator, bully kind of guy, and never had a kind word to say to anybody, really kind of, like, you really did not want to run into him, because he always had something critical to say. It was so tiresome. Anyway, he came by, and, he immediately was looking down his nose at her. Well, those puppies have been running out the street, and, you know, just what she did not need. And and then he started complaining about the mother dog and how the mother dog would always come out and bite him and try and bite him and bark and try and bite at him. And I thought to myself, whoa, you know, I wish I was a dog. I kind of feel like biting you too. You're so negative, you know. And so, anyway, so this whole thing was going on. And but what I did was, what I found myself doing with my energy, because I was in this place of great compassion for the puppy and for this poor young woman. And what I did with this energy was I just kind of put a shield up to just kind of block him out. I didn't deal with him at all. I just kind of blocked him out. And then I just turned to the young woman, and she started to blame the dog, right? Well, I don't know why they do this. They just keep running in the street, you know. And I said to her, you know, honey, they're just babies. They don't know any better. And but I just said it with all this compassion. I was just like, well, you know, honey, they just don't know any better. Just babies. And something came through me because her eyes got ripped. It was Divine Mother came through me. You know, you pray all the time to these spirits to come through. Every once in a while they do, you know. You go, whoa, that was nice. Wish I could do that. But something came, and her eyes got really wide, and I realized that through this whole incident, some kind of healing was happening for her. That, like, this man that was coming by just got put to the side. The abuser and the bully got put to the side. She got a little Divine Mother energy, and the puppy just ended up having a broken leg, and everything ended up being fine. So it was an opportunity for healing, where something was constellated, like, that, an archetype that we often see, that kind of oppressor, victim, and then that's everybody blaming everybody else. He's blaming the dog, and she's blaming the puppy, and, you know, she was blamed by her parents, and he's blaming her, and everybody's blaming, and all of a sudden it was just cut through. And it's like that whole archetype was cut through by that incident. So, and the other thing about life is that life is about giveaway. Life is about sacrifices. We make sacrifices all the time. That has become a very unpopular word because, I don't know, it's just sort of like these martyred saints, and it got to be the sort of negative thing, and we've sort of moved the other way, but life is always about giveaway. You know, when a mother has a child, she gives a huge amount up, you know, including many sleepless nights, and you know, maybe the opportunity to advance in her career and all different kinds of things. So life is full of sacrifices, and we make sacrifices for one another, but we do it because we want to, and because it's in our hearts to do it, not because we should. When we do things because we should, we're not listening to our hearts and our true selves and being in integrity, and often there's resentment then. All right, I hope that's helpful for people. Any questions or comments?
No new questions have come through.
Okay, we have about 15 minutes, yeah, a little more?
Yeah, 16 minutes.
15 minutes. Boy, she's got it down. Okay. 1 minute. Whoa. Okay. I am going to do a little bit of a journey. So I think we'll work with Grandmother Earth and with the Hawthorn. So let's just bring ourselves in. We've been into our heads while I'm talking about all these ideas. And let's just bring ourselves into our hearts, bring our energy down into our bodies and into our hearts and into our bellies. Down into our legs. And just let your energy move down through your knees, through your calves, down into your feet. And feel how you're rooted to the earth. And just release all the tensions. And then let your whole body and all your cells open to her and just receive the nourishment and the love and the warmth that she has for all of us. Just let it fill you. Keep your energy down close to her. And we'll let the spirit of the Hawthorn come in as we're standing with our feet solidly in the earth. Like our feet are bare and we're in nice soft earth, really merging with the earth. And in front of us there's a tree. It's a small tree. And now this time of year it's got some blossoms on it, white five-petaled blossoms. The leaves are just about to come out. It's full of blossoms, an abundance of blossoms. Beautiful little rose family blossoms. tree is full of them. And just allow yourself now to just step into the tree. And as you do, just feel like each branch, there's branches, one branch that comes around one side of you and one around the other. And just let that tree, just feel that energy of that tree hugging you. Keeping your feet in the earth. And this tree's roots bring the medicine from the Divine Mother Earth. This is a grandmother. This is an aspect of Divine Mother, this hawthorn tree. I'm speaking literally. She is an incarnation of Divine Mother. Just let her branches hold you and hug you and heal your heart in whatever way you need healing. Help her to teach you how to keep your heart open but protected. Help her to ask her to help us to let our hearts be like semi-permeable membranes that close down when they should and stay open when they should and everything in between so that we can come back to balance and harmony with all beings. Just feel her coming in and working with our hearts. You might take a moment when you feel angry or resentful at someone and ask her to help you so that you're not sending negativity. But neither are you invalidating your own feelings. Just let her fill your heart and let that radiate out to wherever it needs to go. And ask that whoever this oppressor or irritating person is, be healed in whatever way they need. That any negative cords that are causing you pain just be released. If anything in you needs to heal, so that you're not caught in this pattern, ask that that be healed. We can move into a place of open-heartedness with the balance of protection and the sharp thorns when we need them. The teaching of Hawthorne is that we cannot have an open heart without having a protected heart. And so we give ourselves permission to dance in that balance of openness and closed down. And just ask that when we close down and we open, that it be in beauty and harmony for the good of all creation. I'm going to let you sit with that while I rattle. Thank you. Okay, so when you're ready, step out, step back out from the arms of the tree. Give thanks. Keep the gift of those blossoms in your heart. Know that you can always come back to her, and that you can keep her close to you by buying a little of the tincture or keeping some berries around or drinking the tea. And bring yourselves back into this room, thanking Mother Earth, keeping ourselves connected to her. Bring yourselves back into the room, celebrating and giving thanks for this gift. Grounding back into your body in the room that you're in. Open your eyes. Take a look at the familiar things around you. And hold the gift of the hawthorn in your heart. And be totally present back in this room. And I would encourage everybody to do these ceremonies, these simple healing ceremonies with the water or the earth. We can take a piece of dirt and put it in a bowl, put it on our altar for 4 days, and just visualize the earth is healed and strong. Or we can put that into a stone and bury that into the earth. We can take that bowl of earth and pray over it in that way for 4 days, and then bury that back into the earth or spread that out into the earth. We can take a bit of the earth from a really toxic place and do that. Or we can do that with just the earth in our own yard and ask that that prayer be sent wherever it needs. And it's more powerful if we do it together. If a group of people agree that at a certain time they're going to pray that way over that earth. And that's how we shape-shift form, and that's very real. Shape-shift that healing back into the earth in that relationship. Oh, thank you. So I want to end by just saying that you guys, any of you have any, if these talks are working for you, if you'd like to hear something different, let me know, because, you know, I'm happy to talk about whatever people need. We didn't really get to vaccines tonight, except in an indirect way, to just talk about talking about by staying open to one another in the whole controversy. And I think one more thing I wanted to say about the COVID virus is that we need to stay open to it too, and see that that it's to not be afraid of it, but also to honor our fear, as I've talked about before. But to not see it as the enemy, but to see it as something that's coming through. It's an expression. It's here for a reason. Just like that little puppy got hit for a reason. There's something that's happening. Everything has good in mind and minus, you know, plus and minus in life. Everything has good and bad in it. And it depends a lot on how we relate to it. And so if we can adjust our attitude so we're not seeing it as the enemy, but seeing it as something coming through, partly to mirror to us that we giving us an opportunity to really look at how we need to change, how we look at things. We really see bacteria and viruses as enemies, and really we need to come out of that kind of thinking. There's some research now that talks about viruses actually are packages of DNA, and they come in order to come into our lives in order to exchange DNA with us. So the flu that comes every year is a way that is bringing a shift in collective consciousness in the interaction with the DNA. And that the problem is that we're having more and more, the flu, by the way, for those of you who maybe haven't been around as long as me, but the flu used to be one of those things you get for a couple of days, you're kind of miserable. Oh, well, you'd read a book for a couple of days, and then you go back to work or back to school or whatever. And then over years, it's gotten worse and worse and worse, till now people are sick for 2 weeks, and they're often really, really sick, and then they're coughing for 6 months, and we didn't used to see that. And so that's really because we're not able to integrate that DNA as well, and that's because our systems are not as strong because of the toxins in the environment. So it's not so much that the viruses are so bad, and the flu is so bad, and we need to make it the enemy, as that we need to sort of adjust our attitudes towards all of life, adjust out of making it the enemy and seeing it as a more like a worthy adversary, you know, like, whoa, this is a powerful being that's coming in and bringing some gifts, and how can I integrate those gifts without losing myself or getting really sick. So it's just a different perspective that I'll leave you with to sit with. Thank you. Any questions or comments you have about all that, that would be great. But the virus is a symptom of our imbalance and an opportunity for us to take something new in and a new consciousness. So there's always opportunity in crisis. You sometimes wish you didn't have as many crises to have so many opportunities, but that's how it is right now. It's a time of big crisis and big opportunity. So thank you, all of you. Okay, Lauren, it's all yours.
Okay. Well, somebody sent a comment, Dancing Crow, on the email that I feel like probably sums up where a lot of us are at, so I'll just read it. The message is, thank you, Dr. Francis, for tonight's session. I've been struggling with certain things, and my heart has been heavy, but it feels lighter now. So I couldn't say it better. Thank you, Dancing Crow. I feel like we're in a very sacred space, and it feels like a really good space to go reflect and dream upon.
Thank you to whoever made that comment, because, you know, it's not like I have this all together, and boy, I'm always like radiating light, you know. There's times when I feel like smacking people up the side of the head, you know. So, you know, it's not like it goes away, but you do this practice, it becomes easier. It's like you don't, like, go right to thinking that or sending it or, you know, it's just like it becomes a different neurological pathway, and you sort of run the other pathway, but, you know, the irritation and all that comes, it's like, oh, my God, you know. So, yeah, thank you very much. That's a beautiful comment. Thank you.
So just a few practicals before we close. The recording of tonight will be up on Dancing Crow's website and within a couple days. So feel free, if you would, in fact, please do send the recording and the link on her website to anyone you know who you think might benefit from it. Also on her website, you can find now there's a link to PayPal on her website. Where you can send any donations that you would like to send for tonight's teachings or any teachings in the past or any in the future. Dancing Crow wants to really, really thank all who have sent donations and just really wants to extend her gratitude to you all for that and want you to know that it really does help. And also, just as a reminder, she is working on the phone, and so she is, Dancing Crow is available for shamanic counseling and shamanic healing sessions on the phone, as well as naturopathic consults. So if you or anyone you know might be interested or benefit from that, then you can email or call her. I think that's it for practicals. We'll be back in 2 weeks. And in a minute, I'm going to ask everybody, actually, Brittany, I'll ask you to just go ahead while I'm talking and start unmuting everybody.
Beauty prayer together.
Huh?
I want to do the beauty prayer together.
Okay. Can we say, let me have 30 more seconds and then we can do that?
Okay.
Okay. So everybody, you're muted. If you would just unmute yourselves, and we're going to just say thank you and send our love and blessings to Dancing Crow before we close, okay? So at the count of three, we're going to do that. 1, 2, 3.
Thank you, Dancing Crow.
Beautiful day, beautiful night, beautiful dreams. Okay, let's say this prayer. Say it right after me. And it's an ending prayer, Navajo beauty prayer that I usually end my ceremonies with. So repeat after. The world before us is restored in beauty.
The world behind us is restored in beauty.
The world below us is restored in beauty. The world above us is restored in beauty.
The world above us is restored in beauty.
Our voices are restored in beauty.
Our voices are restored in beauty.
It is finished in beauty.
It is finished in beauty.
Four is the number of the earth, so we often do things four times. So thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.